एवं जन्मानि कर्माणि एवं दस जन्मानि बर्थ कर्मानि एक्टिविटीज ही सर्टेनली वर्णयन्ति ही सर्टेनली अकर्तु of the inactive, ajanasya, of the unborn, cha, and varnayanti, describe, sma, in the past, kavayo, the learned, Veda guhyani, undiscoverable by the Vedas, hitpate, of the Lord of the Heart. Translation. Thus learned men describe the births and activities of the unborn and inactive, which is undiscoverable even in the Vedic literatures. He is the Lord of the heart. Purport. Both the Lord and the living entities are essentially all spiritual. Therefore, both of them are eternal and neither of them has birth and death. The difference is that the so-called births and disappearances of the Lord are unlike those of the living beings. The living beings who take birth and then again accept death are bound by the laws of material nature. But the so-called appearance and disappearance of the Lord are not actions of material nature, but are demonstrations of the internal potency of the Lord. They are described by the great sages for the purpose of self-realization. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord that his so-called birth in the material world and his activities are all transcendental, and simply by meditation on such activities one can attain realization of Brahman and thus become liberated from material bondage. In the Shrutis it is said that the birthless appears to take birth. The Supreme has nothing to do, but because he is omnipotent, everything is performed by him naturally, as if done automatically. As a matter of fact, the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and its different activities are all confidential, even to the Vedic literatures. Yet they are displayed by the Lord to bestow mercy upon the conditioned souls. We should always take advantage of the narrations of the activities of the Lord, which are meditations on Brahman in the most convenient and palatable form. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiltam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nangayate Girim Yatkriva Tamam Vande Shri Guru Dinadarinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So today is the auspicious day of Govardhan Puja. Actually Govardhan Puja was yesterday, but we are celebrating it today, and it's been the tradition in Melbourne that we celebrate it on Saturdays, from what I can remember for the past many years. So again, it's on a Saturday. So I thought I'll speak a little bit on this verse, and then also we'll discuss the Govardhan Leela and the pastime. So as it's mentioned in this verse, there are a few contradictions mentioned here. That learned men describe the births and activities of the unborn and inactive, which is undiscoverable in the Vedas. So here there are two contradictions. They're describing the birth of the unborn and the activity of the inactive. And even we see, in the Sri Upanishads and other Vedic literatures, such contradictions are present in the Shastras. And they can be sometimes hard to understand. And we see that people are trying to understand God from time immemorial. Since from time of yore, if a person is intelligent, has some level of intelligence, he will try to inquire into his or her source, where they have come from. Sorry, I just need to send Ankit this message for Vyasaki Prabhu's pickup. So otherwise, it will be a problem. Okay, so from time immemorial, and if a person has some level of intelligence, they will be inquiring into their source. And if someone has some intelligence, they will figure out that this material world is not functioning automatically by random. There is actually a cause behind it, because in nature we see there's so much structure and order. The seasons are coming and going on time. Our bodies are so complex. If we analyze anything, we see that definitely we can come to the conclusion that there has to be a creator behind that. So people with some level of intelligence, they will conclude that, and then they will try to inquire into the source of their being. So this inquiry has been there from time immemorial. It is even there now. Scientists and philosophers are trying to search for the ultimate source, where they came from, what is the purpose of this world. So we see in many religions that even many people, their conception of God is that God is love, or God is an energy, or God is the creator, or he's nothing. So in this way, or he's the maintainer, the order supplier. And even we see that scientists are trying to come to the root of everything by examining matter in minute detail. So with their imperfect senses and experimental knowledge, they're trying to analyze matter and come to the conclusion that how matter has generated and where does it come from, what is the source of everything. And so many experiments are being conducted, like we see in France, I think they were doing this experiment where they were underground, I think 1 or 2 years ago, they were smashing the atoms, right? And then they were trying to understand where all the energy is coming from. Not exactly sure, but I was reading an article the other day how they are discovering that 450 light years away, some star is being formed. So they are monitoring that development, and so they are trying to come to the conclusion how the universe was created. So in this way, even scientists are trying to understand the source of everything, but because their senses are imperfect, they are unable to come to a right conclusion. And because of their imperfect devices, they cannot come to a right conclusion. And we see others who have a bit more intelligence, they understand that their senses are limited, therefore they take shelter of the Vedic literature. So, or some people, just out of tradition, they have been worshipping the Lord, like especially from India. So, you know, some people are worshipping demigods, some are worshipping Vishnu or Narayan. Or some people want to know the source of everything, so therefore they take to the study of Vedic literature. So therefore they study the Upanishads, the Vedas, the different Vedas, the different Upanishads, the Vedanta Sutra, and there's so many Vedic texts. But still we see they're unable to come to the conclusion that what is the source of everything, that who is supreme. So as is mentioned in this text, that it is that the Supreme Lord is even undiscoverable even in the Vedic literatures, though the Vedic literatures are emanating from the breathing of the Supreme Lord. And Veda is just advaya aham eva Vedya. So the purpose of the Vedic literatures is to know Krishna. But even when people read the Vedic texts, they get bewildered. Or even if people, when they read Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, they get bewildered. If it doesn't have a commentary by the Acharyas. Or I can say for myself, when I was inquiring into spiritual life, I was searching on the internet. So, but on the internet, I just got caught up in dharma, artha, kama and moksha. And I got bewildered. Or even you can pick up a Bhagavad Gita from a bookstore, which only has the translations. But even when we read that, we are not able to understand anything. We are not able to come to the conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme. So the only way one can know the Lord is by His bona fide representatives, by His bona fide devotees. So Krishna says, Tad vidhi pranipatena pari prasanna sevaya upadekshanti jnanam jnanya tattva darshana. One can know the truth by inquiring from a self-realized soul who has seen the truth. Therefore, they can understand what the truth is. So that person has, the spiritual master is the bona fide, transparent via medium through which we can see the Supreme Lord. Just like you have glass. So through glass you can see what's on the other side. So similarly, when we render service to the spiritual master in full surrender, then we can, the spiritual master is like the transparent via medium through which we can understand the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord is only understood by bhakti. So as Krishna says, bhaktiya mam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate tad anantaram. So only by unalloyed devotional service can I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, be known. And when one is in full consciousness by such devotion, he enters into the kingdom of God. So only by the process of bhakti executed in the association of devotees under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master can we understand the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, it's just not possible. Otherwise, we are covered over by Krishna's energy. As Krishna says, Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita modoyam nabi janati loko mam ajam abhayam. So to the foolish and unintelligent, they are covered over by my internal potency and they cannot understand me. So even if one picks up the Vedic literatures, or if one has so many university degrees or PhDs, by intellectual gymnastics, they cannot understand the Supreme Lord. And we have seen time and time again, so many intelligent people, we come across so many, the intelligentsia of the world, like especially in universities, and they are very, very intelligent, and they know their stuff pretty well. And some of them have even read the Vedas. But still they cannot understand anything. They are confused. Because this knowledge has to be revealed from the heart. So even if one reads the Vedic text, even if it's Srimad Bhagavatam, they will get some other meaning out of it. And generally, most of the people are attracted by the flowery words of the Vedas. Or like some people will conclude, Indra is mentioned, you know, this number of times in the Vedas, and Vishnu is mentioned less than Indra, so therefore Indra is supreme. So like that they will come to their own conclusions. But if we study under a proper guru, then we can actually understand the knowledge perfectly. And the contradictions mentioned in this verse actually prove the inconceivable potency of the Lord. So when we talk about God, Krishna has to be inconceivable, otherwise there is no meaning to God. So these contradictions actually prove that He is God, because He is inconceivable. And therefore He can perform these contradictions. So we see how, though Krishna is, the Absolute Truth is unborn and inactive, we are also unborn, but Krishna takes birth. But Krishna's birth is not like our birth. So our birth is actually carried out by the laws of nature or by the laws of karma. We are put into a certain situation according to our past activities, and we do not choose a particular nation, parents or society. We do not open a catalogue and see where we want to take birth. But we are actually forced to take birth by the laws of nature according to our past activities. But Krishna's Krishna takes birth according to his own free will. So Krishna is not limited by any law of nature. But Krishna says, I appear once in a day, O Brahma. But again, it's under my free will. So by Krishna's Atma Maya, under his internal potency, Krishna takes birth. But his birth is also quite extraordinary. He appears with four arms and fully decorated. Whereas we appear covered in blood, mucus, and abominable substances. And whereas when Krishna takes birth, he's effulgent and fully decked out. And it appears that Krishna is growing, but beyond a certain stage, he does not age anymore. So even in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna looked like 24, 25 years old, though his age was 125 years. So in this way, we see Krishna does not actually age. So in this way, Krishna's activities are carried out, and his activities are also very extraordinary. His activities are not like us. If we read the Krishna book, we can see that all his pastimes are quite extraordinary. He exhibits superhuman power. He does superhuman activities. At once, he covers himself. He acts like an ordinary human being, which is very bewildering to people. But at the same time, every now and then, he'll perform some superhuman activities. So every day he would kill a few demons before lunch and do, very extraordinary activities. This proves that he is actually God. And the pastime of Govardhan Leela is also an extraordinary activity, because he lifted the Govardhan Hill for 7 days on his pinky finger, which any mortal being cannot do. So it's mentioned that Krishna performs his pastimes as a benediction for his devotees, or even as a benediction for the conditioned souls, to attract them. So Krishna's pastimes in the material world are like a trailer. A trailer is running. So Gopalandesh was giving this example in one of his classes, I remember. He is saying that when Krishna appears, it's like, you watch a trailer of a movie. So the trailer of a movie gives you a glimpse into what the movie is about. So in 3 minutes or whatever minutes, the entire movie is summarized, and it attracts you. It lures you into watching that movie in the cinema or at your home. So similarly, Krishna's pastimes are like that. They are actually a window to the spiritual world, where we can Krishna gives us a glimpse and gives us an opportunity to participate in the future by becoming absorbed in his pastimes. That's why it's said Atma Maya has two meanings, that Krishna appears by his internal potency, and also that Atma Maya means it is Krishna's mercy that he performs these activities to attract the conditioned soul, who is simply attracted to illusory pastimes. And so today is Govardhan Puja, and when we hear of these pastimes, though we have heard them so many, you might have heard them many times, but even if we hear it again and again, we become purified, and our propensity to render devotional service to Krishna even increases when the lust and greed diminishes in the heart. So therefore, we have the Srimad Bhagavatam class daily, so we can become absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord. And therefore, we are encouraged to read these books, and especially on appearance days or festival days, we should try to absorb ourselves into the Leela of the Lord by hearing lectures and reading the pastimes, and by rendering some special service to the Lord on that day. So with the pastime of Govardhan Puja, first I'd like to explain how Govardhan Hill was manifested on this planet. So as we understand, when Bhumi Devi was in great distress due to being overburdened by demoniac kings, and therefore she approached Brahma to make a solution, and because Brahma could not make a solution, so they all went to the Shirodak ocean and they recited the Purusha Shukta to Lord Vishnu for his to make a solution, and Lord Vishnu said there was an transmission in the heart of Lord Brahma, that he would actually appear on the earth as Krishna, and all the demigods should take birth in the various families. So then in the spiritual world, so Krishna told Radharani that he likes to go to the material world, to earth, and she should accompany him. And she said she'll only accompany him if the Vrajadham manifests there, Govardhan Parvat, Govardhan Hill manifests, and the Yamuna also manifests. Then she'll come. And Krishna said, fine. And he said that actually Govardhan Hill has already manifested on the earth. And that Govardhan Hill is actually the son of Dronachal. Achal means hill. So Govardhan Hill is actually the son of Dronachal in South India. So he's already manifested. And that, then there was this Muni called Pulastya Muni, a very powerful sage. And he wanted to perform meditation. And he was looking for a place where he could perform meditation on a hill. So then he wanted to perform meditation on Govardhan Hill. So therefore he approached Dronachal, the father of Govardhan Hill, and said that, I would like to perform, you know, meditation and tapasya on your hill. And Dronachal, he reluctantly agreed. He said, fine, okay. So you can take Govardhan Hill wherever you want to and you can perform meditation. So then he went to pick up Govardhan Hill, and so Govardhan Hill said, you can take me only on one condition. He said that, I will go with you, but wherever you place me, I will stay fixed on that place and I'm not going to move. And then Govardhan Hill was huge, was like going above the clouds, was much bigger than Mount Everest, it's described, and much, very wide and very tall. So he said, fine, deal done. So then Pulastya Muni, he picked up Govardhan Hill and started walking towards the Himalayas. And as he was walking, he reached, you know, where Govardhan Hill is now, near Mathura. And he had to pass urine. But he couldn't control himself. He had to, you know, urgently pass urine. And he was very desperate. So it's like, you know, if you're holding Govardhan, Govardhan is none other than Krishna. So you just can't pass urine while holding Govardhan Hill. So he had to place Govardhan on the ground. So he placed Govardhan on the ground and went to pass urine. So after he passed urine, he did Achaman and everything. And then he went to pick him up again. And then Govardhan didn't budge an inch. So Govardhan said, you know, you can't lift me, because the deal was, if you place me down, I'm going to stay here. But Pulastya Muni was very furious, because he had to, you know, attend to the calls of nature, and therefore he thought this was not fair. So he cursed Govardhan Hill. He said, I'll curse you that from now onwards, by the passing of every day, your height will reduce by one mustard seed. So therefore, if you go to Govardhan now, it's not very high. What's the height of Govardhan Hill at its max? Does anyone know? I think near a few meters, yeah. Near ISKCON, 50-80 meters, near Govardhan Ashram. I think that's where it's highest. And there's a fort also over there. I think that's the highest. So even when I went the first time, I was quite surprised that it's actually, at some places it's not even manifest. But, so in that way Govardhan was placed where it is now, and Govardhan was cursed. But actually that is a benediction, because materialistic people, that way they're not interested in Govardhan Hill, because, you know, it's just a hill for a materialistic person. we say Govardhan Hill, and when they go there, it's just, you know, just a small hill. Even in Victoria there are much bigger hills. So they say, you know, what's the big deal going there? So, you know, many materialistic people, they are actually attracted to the Himalayas. And specifically many Westerners, they want to go to Nepal and see the Mount Everest and the Himalayan ranges over there. So because Krishna is the Govardhan Hill, it is an offense to walk on Govardhan Hill, because Govardhan Hill is non-different from Krishna. And as Krishna says that, you can worship Govardhan Hill And therefore, even in the altar, we have Giriraj. So you can pick up a pebble, which is actually non-different from Krishna, and you can do deity worship. Of course, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. So in that way, it's actually a benediction. So Govardhan shrunk, and even devotees can circumambulate Govardhan hill that way. So it was actually turned out to be a benediction. And it's described that Govardhan hill is actually the shape of a peacock. If you can get some brochure and see that. And Radhakund and Shyamkund are the eyes of the peacock. So if you see Govardhan hill, either you're on a helicopter or if you pick up a pamphlet, it's described that the way Govardhan hill looks like is like exactly like a peacock, and the eyes are Radhakund and Shyamkund. And so with the pastime of Govardhan Puja, today being Govardhan Puja, after the pastime of the Yajna Brahmanas, Krishna and Balram saw in Vraj that Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men were making a huge arrangement for a sacrifice. Of course, Krishna knew that it is for Indra because he is omniscient. But in Krishna, how old was Krishna at that time? Anyone knows? 8 years. Seven years old. Okay. So Krishna was 7 years old and he knew what's going on, but he's omniscient and he just asked his father. He said, "My dear father, Nanda Maharaj, what is this arrangement you're all making? And who are you making it for? What is the result of this arrangement? And what is the purpose and what is the procedure of this arrangement? What are you doing, basically?" And when Nanda Maharaj saw his boy, who was only 7 years old, he thought, you know, it's like if you have a child, young child, you know, they ask an intricate question and you're reluctant to explain because how can the child understand? They don't have that much intelligence yet. So Nanda Maharaj was a bit hesitating to explain how to put it in simple words. And then Krishna further said, he said that liberal and saintly persons actually do not keep any secret, neither from their friends or enemies or even from a neutral party. Therefore you should explain it to me. And he said, even if people are not so liberal, but at least they should share the secrets with their friends and their intimate family. So therefore you should not keep any secret. And then furthermore, Krishna asked Nanda Maharaj that, is this a Vedic injunction what you're doing? In other words, is it according to the Vedic text? Or is it just a family custom or tradition which has been going on for a long time? And are you performing this in knowledge? Because when somebody does something in knowledge, they get the full benefit of it. So then Nanda Maharaj replied that actually this sacrifice is actually a traditional ceremony. It's a custom. And it's been going on for a long time, so we are doing it. And he said the reason we are doing it is actually to please Indra, who has supplied us rain for so many years. And even now he has supplied us. Therefore, the grass has grown green and we are able to engage in agriculture and produce grain. And we need rain even for religious ceremonies. Because if there's no rain, there won't be any grass for the cows to eat. And therefore the cows cannot produce sufficient milk. And when there's not sufficient milk, you cannot produce ghee. Like you see in the world, at this point of time, there's scarcity of ghee. And ghee is very expensive. And in Australia, you get good quality ghee, but in most parts of the world, the ghee we get is actually adulterated, especially in India. You know, there's so many ghee scandals going on. Even the milk is not pure. So because this is all due to a lack of rain. So he said, because Indra is the presiding demigod for rain, therefore we have to show him a gratitude by worshipping him, by performing this yajna. And therefore we will get rain, which is necessary for not only religious performances, but even for economic development. So they understood that economic development is carried out. For economic development, you need the land and the cow and the bull. In other words, you need an agrarian society. Therefore, there is economic development. And in today's modern society, economic development, the cows are killed. And everyone wants to live in the cities and work in the factories or the offices. So, but that's a very artificial way of living. And we see there's actually, if that kind of, this kind of lifestyle has actually resulted in scarcity. Scarcity of water, scarcity of natural resources. And that people are actually not happy living such an artificial lifestyle. So in this way, he gave the reasons. And Krishna said that, he said, no, you know, you need to stop this sacrifice. And his reasons for stopping the sacrifice were twofold. One was that the boons that demigods give are actually temporary. And the demigods themselves are temporary. Therefore, only a less intelligent person will be interested in temporary gains. And secondly, that even the boons the demigods are given are actually bestowed by the Supreme Lord. So therefore, why not worship the Supreme Lord? Because ultimately everything is coming from the Supreme Lord. So worship the root, and therefore everyone else is satisfied. And in order to convince Nanda Maharaj, Krishna spoke the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, which is basically sophisticated atheism. So Krishna, by word jugglery, he actually wanted to smash the pride of Indra, because Indra was very proud. He forgot that he's actually a servant of the Lord, and that he's a delegated administrator giving rain to people on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So he forgot Krishna's position, and he thought he was the all in all and supreme. And he thought that he is giving everyone everything, and that therefore he should be worshipped. And he was very proud, and the very things Indra was accusing others of, he had those very tendencies in himself. It's like sometimes when we criticize or accuse other people, generally if we look deeper, those very tendencies are present within us. So Indra's problem was, situation was similar. He was accusing the Brajbasis and Krishna also for not understanding the cosmic situation, but he himself couldn't understand. And then, therefore, Krishna spoke the Karma Mimamsa philosophy through word jugglery to bewilder, to basically ignite Indra's anger. Because the cowherd men were simple people. They would have listened to Krishna anyway. But this was specifically to make Indra furious. Furious is like, if somebody is really angry, you know, not angry, but furious, you know, their blood is boiling. You know, if somebody is furious, their lips are, they are shaking and their blood is boiling. So he wanted to put Indra in his place, and he wanted to make him really furious. So therefore he, as a 7-year-old boy, he spoke the Karma Mimamsa philosophy. And Krishna said that, actually, you know, you don't need to worship Indra. Everything, that you should actually carry out your duty. You know, in India they say duty. We need to do our duty. Everyone should do duty. Bhagavad Gita says do your duty. Everything happens by work. So he said, if you actually carry out your work, then even if there is any demigod, first of all, there are no demigods, but even if there is, they only give the results according to the activity you have carried out. So he said that according to our past activities, we have got a certain kind of material situation, and according to our present karma, we will get a certain kind of future situation. Therefore, work is supreme. So all you need to do is just work. You just do your duty, and then the laws of nature will be obligated to give you the appropriate result and the rain. So Nanda Maharaj, they are basically cowherd men, or they are Vaishyas. For Vaishyas there is four duties. There is cow protection, there is banking, there is trade and agriculture. So they were specifically engaged in cow protection. So he said, you know, you just need to engage in cow protection, do your duty. As it's interesting, even in Bhagavad Gita says, that verse 314, Anna Bhavanti Bhutani, what is it? Parajanya Anna Sambhava Yagya Yagya Karma Samudbhava. So that grain is produced by rain, The human beings need grain to subsist, and grain is produced by sufficient rain. And sufficient rain is produced by yajna. And yajna is born of prescribed duties. And prescribed duties are contained within the Vedas. And Vedas are emanating from the Supreme Lord's breathing. So again, we see that yajna is born of prescribed duty. So here Krishna said, therefore, you just need to carry out your prescribed duty. But he said that you take the yajna part out. When one engages in prescribed duty, automatically the yajnas are also performed. Prescribed duties means carrying out the various yajnas also. So he said you take the yajna out. You throw the yajna out. You don't need to worship any Indra. There's no Indra. Or even if there is, he's obligated to give the results to the activities you're performing. And he said, everything is carried out by the three modes of nature, goodness, passion and ignorance. And the clouds work by the mode of passion. Therefore, what does Indra have to do with this? And he said, furthermore, the clouds rain water everywhere. So the clouds throw water on the ocean and they throw water on the land. Nobody needs water on the ocean. There's plenty of water. So water is needed on the land. Therefore, Indra has nothing to do with this. Therefore, you can forego this sacrifice. So in this way, Krishna, by word jugglery, he tried to convince. And then Nanda Maharaj said, okay, fine, you know, Krishna will do that. But for the time being, let us do this sacrifice and then we'll do a separate one for Govardhan Hill. So Krishna said, basically, you worship Govardhan Hill and the Brahmanas. He said, no, we'll do a separate one for you and we'll do one for Indra. So he said, basically, you know, don't waste your time. You have already made so much arrangement. You just worship Govardhan Hill, who is non-different from me. And the coward men were very simple and they had full faith in Krishna. So they agreed. And when they agreed, and then Krishna gave them the full directions how to carry out the sacrifice. So Krishna told them, make nice preps, make puri, heaps of sweets from milk. He said, you worship the, invite the local brahmanas, make, get them to chant the Vedic hymns and worship the Govardhan Hill, and you give them sufficient charity, remunerate the brahmanas, and you worship the cows, you know, dress them very opulently. He said, then take care of the chandalas, the dogs, all the species, give everyone prasadam. And in this way then you put the cows in front and you circumambulate Govardhan Hill. So, and they made all the elaborate arrangement and they did that. And then Krishna assumed, just to convince them that Govardhan Hill is Krishna, Krishna assumed a huge form. And then Krishna began to eat all the sweets which were piled on the hill, just to convince them. And then everyone, including Krishna, who was witnessing this huge form and Govardhan Hill, they all offered obeisances. And in this way, the Govardhan Puja was celebrated. And then Krishna further on, he said that if you don't do this, the snakes on the hill will bite you. There are lots of snakes, they will bite you if you ignore to perform Govardhan Puja in the future. And he said, if you want to be happy, you perform this puja. So he gave this benediction. And in this way Krishna got them to do it, and they did it. And when all this took place, then Indra, after a while, he figured out what's happening. And Indra understood that actually his yajna or puja has been stopped. So Indra was furious. We have to understand why Indra was furious. So basically Indra was furious because his puja was stopped. Puja means glorification. So Indra's glorification was stopped, which was going on for so many years. Suddenly it stopped. And his happiness and, you know, showing him honor. So, you know, it's like going on for year after year and suddenly it just stopped. And this year he even gave the rain. So he has already given the rains. And now they don't even acknowledge him. So he got very hurt. It's like, if somebody neglects you, we feel very offended, right? If somebody very dear neglects you, whether it's your partner or wife, or fiance or anyone, they, or your friend, if they neglect you and you have done so much for them, you become very, very, it actually hurts you. Or, you know, sometimes even amongst best friends, you know, sometimes there is dissension between friends because one friend says, I did so much for this person. I went out of the way, I gave them money, I covered them from so many situations, and now he or she just ignored me in the company of other friends or whatever situation it is. So then we become very, very angry, even if we don't say it out loud, but inside we feel very hurt. So in this way, Indra was feeling very offended because he thought that he had given them economic prosperity, and because of him, religious sacrifices were being carried out. Because as I mentioned before, without rain you can't get grass. So for cows to graze, you need grass, you need pastures, and then cows give nice milk. So from milk, so many preps are prepared, and milk is necessary for purifying the brain tissues to understand spiritual subject matter. And milk, you also need ghee to carry out the sacrifices, and for sacrifices you need grain. So Indra thought, everything is being done by me, and now they don't even acknowledge me, and even worse, they listen to a 7-year-old boy. And Indra's problem was that, it's not that Indra was a demon, he's a devotee, but he could not understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as mentioned in this verse. He got bewildered. So he could not understand that a 7-year-old boy is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's acting like an ordinary kid. And he's speaking to all the cow, to the entire village, and by his talkative language and his word jugglery, they all agreed to him, they all listened to him. So he was actually furious. And he was also surprised that how the entire town has accepted this child more as God, in fact more than God. The residents of Vrindavan accept Krishna not only as God but more than God, because of their loving relationships with the Lord in the five humors. And Indra was the opposite, he could not accept Krishna as God. And therefore then Indra, he called for the Samvartaka cloud. He said, Samvartaka, come here. If you have seen little Krishna in that, you know, he calls Samvartaka, you know, order Samvartaka, come here. And then the Samvartaka cloud comes. Actually, it's a person. That cloud is a person. It's very hard for people to understand that behind the functions of material nature is actually a personality governing a certain functionality. It's very, very difficult for people to know, because people think that matter is independent. Matter is working without any control. And from matter, all amazing things come. From matter comes life. Matter gives birth to consciousness. Matter gives birth to happiness. So everything comes from matter. You know, there's no controller. And what to speak of a Supreme Lord? We are saying demigods. What to speak of a Supreme Lord? The President, the CEO. The other day I was on the tram and I met this couple who come to a program. Then, so this girl, I invited them to today for Govardhan Puja. I said, come and, you know, circumambulate the hill. It's going to be a big party. There will be a lot of chanting and dancing and feasting. So she asked me in front of, it was a crowded tram. So she asked me, can you tell me the significance of Govardhan Puja? What is this all about? So now everyone was looking at me. I was in devotee cloth. So I thought, how to, because if I'm speaking to her, everyone is listening. Though they're pretending they're not listening. But everyone is listening. So I was thinking, how to explain in such a way that they also understand. So then I explained that, you know, behind material nature is not independent. There is a person who's controlling an aspect of nature. It's not going on by random or by chance. And I explained the whole pastime. And then I could see the looks on the people's face. They were thinking, yeah, nice story. Very nice story, you know. So like this, it is very difficult for people to, because of a faulty type of education, very difficult for people to understand that material nature is not independent. There is There is functionality behind it. There is a person behind it. And that consciousness is controlling matter. They think that consciousness arises from matter and matter is independent. And that is basically the demoniac mentality, as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 16. He says that people think that this material world is produced by lust or sex life, and that I am happy, I am independent, and everything is fine. So everything is happening by chance. So this is actually the demoniac mentality. But in the Vedic civilization, they understood that there is a personality behind each and everything. So in this way, Indra summoned the Samvartaka clouds, and basically Indra said that because Indra was very furious, he thought he is the supreme controller and everyone should be worshipping him. And he said that, okay, Samvartaka, you come. And Samvartaka are not ordinary clouds. Like we see in Bangkok, Thailand is being flooded right now. So the floods are even reaching Bangkok and people are putting all kinds of levees to stop the water from entering. And this is just an ordinary rain by material nature. But Samvartaka clouds are those clouds which are summoned at the time of universal destruction. So these are not any, this is not any ordinary rain. So Indra completely lost control of himself, and he thought that because these Brajbasis are very proud, and he thought he actually said that they are very proud of their material opulence. And I'll actually read you out what Indra says. It's quite interesting. So what Indra says to the Samvartaka clouds, which actually indicates his pride. So it's, as the director of different kinds of clouds, Indra called for the Samvartaka. This cloud is invited when there is a need to devastate the whole cosmic manifestation. The Samvartaka was ordered by Indra to go over Vrindavan and inundate the whole area with an extensive flood. Demoniacally, Indra thought himself to be the all-powerful Supreme Personality. When demons become very powerful, they defy the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead. Indra, though not a demon, was puffed up by his material position and he wanted to challenge the Supreme Controller. He thought himself, at least for the time being, as powerful as Krishna. So now Indra speaks. Just see the impudence of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. They are simply inhabitants of the forest. But being infatuated with their friend Krishna, who is nothing but an ordinary human being, they have dared to defy the demigods. So he's saying that these simple people of the forest, what do they know? You know, of the laws of nature. And they just listen to this Krishna, a little boy. And now they have foregone the sacrifice. And then further on he says, Indra cursed the action of the inhabitants of Vrindavan and said, by defying the authority of the demigods, the inhabitants of Vrindavan will suffer in material existence. Having neglected the sacrifice for the demigods, they cannot cross over the impediments of the ocean of material existence. So now Indra is accusing them that they don't understand the laws of nature out of pride. But this very fault is within Indra. He doesn't understand the laws of nature, that Krishna is actually supreme. And then Indra further declares, these cowherd men in Vrindavan have neglected my authority on the advice of this talkative boy who is known as Krishna. He is nothing but a child, and by believing this child, they have enraged me. Thus he ordered the Samvartaka cloud to go and destroy the prosperity of Vrindavan. The men of Vrindavan, said Indra, have become too puffed up by their material opulence and are overconfident due to the presence of the tiny friend Krishna. He is simply talkative, childish, and unaware of the complete cosmic situation, although he is thinking himself very advanced in knowledge. Because they have taken Krishna so seriously, they must be punished. They should be destroyed with their cows. So in this way, Krishna told the Samvartaka clouds, you go and punish them. So he said, you know, they are puffed up by the opulences and knowledge, and therefore they dare defy me. So Indra was so furious, because when somebody is very angry, they lose control of themselves. Have you ever experienced that when you're very enraged? You just can't think properly. And we do say all kinds of things which we are not meant to say. And we do all kinds of things. So Indra even lost complete sense of dharma, and he wanted to kill all the cows. And he wanted to kill all the residents of Vrindavan. So he told the Samvartaka, you go and destroy them. And then the Samvartaka cloud had some sense of dharma. So the Samvartaka cloud said, you want us to go to Vrindavan and kill the cows and, you know, kill everyone else? Are you sure? And Indra said, yeah, I'm sure, you go. And to assure them, he said, I'll follow you behind. It's mentioned. So I'll follow you on my Aravata. Indra's carrier is the elephant Aravata. So he said, okay, I'll follow you on the Aravata, and we'll get some wind gods also, the Maruts. And we'll get a few Maruts and other people, storms. So we'll go and wreak havoc on this land of Raj. And okay, they said, they went, and then there was severe rainfall. So such severe rainfall that, not like ordinary rainfall, the rainfall was like arrows are piercing in your body. Constant. And there were pillars of rain. Just like this pillar is coming down, you know, of rain. Like this constant rain accompanied by severe winds and a storm. So when you are wet in rain and it's windy, you feel cold. So as a result of this rain, everything was flooded. They could not distinguish the high grounds from the low grounds. It was all, everywhere was water. So then the residents of Vrindavan, because they're pure devotees, they immediately took shelter of Krishna. So they all went to, they put the cows in the front and they went to Krishna. And the cows were under the cows. And so they prayed that, Govinda, you are the protector of your devotees, and so therefore please protect us. And Krishna could understand that Indra was offended, and therefore he's causing this severe rainfall. And then Krishna thought, fine, okay. So then Krishna described that Krishna ran from his house to pick up the Govardhan hill. He went to Govardhan, and he didn't get wet on the way by Yoga Maya potency. Not a drop of rain fell on him, on his turban or on his body. His clothes, he was perfectly dry. In the severe rain is going. And he lifted the Govardhan hill on his pinky finger. And he said, dear residents, all of you, please come under this gigantic umbrella. And this way you'll be, you won't get wet and you'll be protected. So then all the residents of Vrindavan with their paraphernalia, with the cows, they came under there. And when they were under the Govardhan hill, they were not afflicted by hunger and thirst also. It's mentioned. It's amazing. For 7 days, 7 nights, they were not afflicted by any hunger and thirst because they were simply absorbed in seeing Krishna. They were in so much ecstasy in looking at Krishna. They were so absorbed that they forgot all about the hunger and thirst. So this is in the very advanced stages. And in this way, Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill, and for 7 days and seven nights, nothing happened. And Indra was shocked to see the potency of Krishna, that how he's holding this hill and protecting everyone. Then Indra realized his mistake and stopped, summoned the Samvartaka clouds back, and therefore the waters receded, and then Krishna told them, now you can go out. And then he placed the hill back, its usual, its normal position. And then we know that the residents of Vrindavan, they glorify Krishna. This is that chapter, wonderful Krishna. And then Indra comes with the Surabhi cow from the spiritual world. And Indra sees Krishna in a secluded place and he recites his prayers. So we could think that why the devotees of the Lord were put in distress. But actually the residents, why were devotees put into such severe distress? For them it's not material distress. So sometimes, like one person was telling me, in order to understand light, you need to understand darkness. Without darkness you cannot understand light. You cannot appreciate light. Or if you need to understand white, you need to know black. So in this material world, there is always duality. And a lot of people say that in order to understand happiness, you need to know what suffering is. You have to go through suffering, then you will actually appreciate happiness. Many people say that. So, and even the material world, we see actually happiness is the cessation of, it's cessation between two kinds of material miseries. So unless people go through material miseries, they cannot appreciate any happiness. So, but this was not actually any kind of material distress. The example is given in the Shastras is that when one, if somebody is very hungry, their taste for food increases even more. Though we like certain kind of palatable dish, but if we are really hungry, then we really appreciate that dish because you're eating in great hunger. So similarly, the residents of Vrindavan, this incident actually increased their dependency on the Lord. Because, and even we see with, even in Queen Kunti's prayers, that even when Uttara was shot by an arrow by Ashwatthama, and Uttara immediately went to Krishna to take shelter because she's a pure devotee. So pure devotees, they don't take shelter of anything else. They completely depend on the Lord. So she asked Krishna for protection. So similarly, in this case also, the residents of Vraj, they went to Krishna to take shelter because they were fully dependent on the Lord. And it increased their appreciation of Krishna's giving them protection. So in this way, this actually brought them closer to the Lord. It increased their dependency. So, but from a mundane point of view, it looks like devotees are put into great distress. And even we see, even today, we see sometimes devotees are going through a hard time. But generally devotees, if they see Krishna's hand in it, they actually see it as Krishna's mercy. Krishna is actually trying to bring them closer to them. And even Srila Prabhupada's, all his business attempts were frustrated in India. And Prabhupada was trying to propagate Krishna consciousness by accumulating wealth. Everything was frustrated. And Prabhupada actually saw that as Krishna trying to bring him closer to him. And Prabhupada would, what's that verse? If someone is dear to the Lord, then Krishna strips him away of all his family, friends and material. Sorry? Here is that verse. So, if someone is dear to the Lord, if a Lord favors a devotee, then the Lord strips away that devotee of all the material opulences and family and friends, and therefore then the devotee depends on the Lord. So in this way, the residents of Vrindavan were actually not suffering, though we might think, why they are devotees and they are put in such a harsh situation. And even as devotees, we will also be placed in a tough situation. We are not utopians, idealists, everything is very idealistic. Everything is not idealistic in this day and age. So there will be many problems, but we actually have to see whether it is in preaching or in our personal life, there will be challenges, and we have to see the hand of the Lord in that, how that Krishna is actually trying to purify us and bring us closer to Him. So I'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhuji. What is Govardhan Puja? Govardhan Puja is the day Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill for 7 days. After Govardhan Puja is the day where we circumambulate Govardhan hill, because Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill to protect the inhabitants of Vrindavan, in short. And Govardhan hill is non-different from Krishna. So therefore we worship Govardhan hill and we circumambulate it. So this evening, there will be a hill manifest here with all sweets, and Giriraj will come from the altar and preside on the hill, and all the bhoga will be accepted by him at 5 p.m. 4:30 will be aarti, 5 p.m. And then all of us, we will circumambulate Govardhan hill. If we circumambulate Giriraj, it is as good as circumambulating Govardhan hill. Even Sanatan Goswami was told by, I think, Lord Chaitanya. So he was old and he couldn't circumambulate the hill anymore. Because it's 23 kilometers and it takes 6-7 hours, maybe less if you are a good walker. And some people actually do Dandavats Parikram. So he couldn't do it anymore, and he said, okay, you just take this you take the Giriraj and you just circumambulate. So that is as good as circumambulating Govardhan Hill. So today we get the opportunity. Actually, we can even do it every day. You just circumambulate the temple. You go on Dank Street, Kerfert Road, Little Page or Page Street, and come down Boyd Street, and you can circumambulate. And even people, many people sometimes unknowingly they circumambulate the temple, you know. Either they're doing a courier delivery or pizza delivery, or they're just driving around the block. Sometimes unknowingly they circumambulate. I've been asked to stop the class. Any other question? Yes, Prabhu.
You said that we should not go to Govardhan Hill because it's Krishna.
Yes.
But then there is a temple there on top of Govardhan Hill.
Yeah.
We go there. So how do we
understand? I haven't seen any ISKCON devotees going. I've only seen the Brajbasis stepping on the Govardhan, but anyway, I can't comment on that, you know. I don't know. But generally, one should not step on the Lord. The monkeys are stepping, you know, there's thousands of them on the hill. We should not step on the Lord. It says in the Krishna book. And one can worship with the permission of the spiritual master. Therefore, actually, you see, if you go to Govardhan Hill, it is fenced off, so people don't climb the hill. So, you know, most people understand we should not step on the Govardhan Parvat. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.